bellicose, pugnacious, truculent. Anybody know what any of those words mean without shouting it out? What's that? That's pretty good. So if I were to give a list of about a dozen words here that might be synonyms for those three words, bellicose, pugnacious, truculent. It's funny, I heard one of the ESPN guys recently use that word truculent. I thought, what does that mean? So I had to go look it up, you know. So if I were to give a list of about a dozen of these words that, like I said, might be a way of expanding words you're probably more familiar with to be able to say, oh, that's what bellicose and pugnacious and truculent means. Argumentative, belligerent, bitter. By the way, these are alphabetical, okay? Cruel, ferocious, fierce, harsh, mean, quarrelsome, rude, savage, scathing, sharp, vitriolic. It's where you spend most of your day, right? Just kidding, okay? May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength, my redeemer. So, when you listen to somebody talk and you're around them for a period of time, you can kind of get a sense of some of the thinking that might go on in their head because thoughts precede words, right? Well, if you look at how somebody's acting and what they're doing, you can even back the truck up a little bit more and recognize that if a person's acting a certain way, they probably talked about it a little bit and they certainly have probably thought about it. And then if you see a particular habit that an individual is doing and continuing to repeat, you can look at habits that are preceded by actions, that are preceded by words, that are preceded by thoughts. So you think about how that works, thoughts, and then words, and then actions, and then habits. And sometimes those are good habits, and sometimes those are not so good habits. Sometimes we call those virtues, and sometimes we call those vices. Okay. So I wanted to start out with this a bit in regards to primarily focusing in the gospel. And as I usually do contradict myself, I'm going to say something about the first reading and the psalm before I jump into the gospel. So a couple of verses from the first reading, from Isaiah 40, 21 to 31, which is the first of the four suffering servant songs. He gives power to the weak and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. But those who wait on the Lord, and in the Hebrew, the word wait is akin to hope. And the word picture for the word hope that I've shared with you before is a rope. So it'd be like if you were out, let's say, in a river or in a lake or whatever, and you were struggling, and somebody threw you a rope, and you hung on to it, and they start to pull you to safety, that's what to wait on the Lord. There's hope, that you hope that he's going to be the one, because you trust that he's the one who's going to rescue. He's going to one who's going to deliver you, okay? To wait on the Lord is to hope in him. To wait on the Lord even means to serve. And so part of serving is getting in that, those thoughts, those words, those actions, those habits of serving by trusting, by hoping that he's the one who's going to continue to be there. So to wait on the Lord, and waiting on the Lord in this context, by its very nature, begins to build up strength. Because it's interesting, if you look at somebody who seems a bit hopeless, they don't have a lot of strength. But someone who seems to have a degree of hope seems to have more strength. They seem to have more fortitude. They just have a resilience because there's a hopefulness that's there. It's like they're drawing from that well of hope as opposed to a hope of, or as opposed to a well of hopelessness or despair or despondency. Psalm 147, verse 3, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. So I'm going to say something that's potentially, by the way, could you gals do me a favor? Could you put up that Nicene Creed for me? And go down a little bit. Go down a little more. And one more. Yeah, right there. See the one, two, three, see the fourth line down? So it says, and we believe, and so you could preface that, and we believe, but the fourth line down says, and for the remission of sins. So we believe in the remission of sins, right? Okay. So I just want you to keep that in the back of your mind, that we believe in the remission of sins. So sin in the life of the individual, and in particular, sin makes sense for the Christian because it's a violation of our relationship with the Lord. For a person who's not a Christian, they might not define bad behavior as sinful behavior because there would not necessarily be any retribution for that, right? But sin for the Christian certainly doesn't create hope. It creates ultimately misery and brokenness, and ultimately a need for healing, right? That's what sin does. Sin is an unraveling of personhood. To sin means that you're acting less than human. Okay? To sin means that you're groveling into a behavior that, well, was probably preceded by words and by thoughts that is unraveling your humanity. Because the fruit of sin, according to the scriptures, is death, but it's a slow process. And that unraveling process creates misery and brokenheartedness and can even cause illness. Okay. So if the church is called upon to preach salvation and to preach hope, and to preach forgiveness, and to preach healing, and to be able to proclaim the remission of sins and all that goes along with that, right? All the misery, all the brokenheartedness, all the potential illness that can get created by sinfulness. And that's not to say that all illness is created by sinfulness, but the reality is we're in a broken world. And we're in a broken world that is continuing to unravel, and we look at it, and that's what the scriptures say, is the world will continue to unravel. It's like it'll come off its hinge. And so the idea of any order within the world in which we live is all an illusion because it's going around in circles of chaos. It's almost like it's spinning out of control. Okay? So if the church is called to preach and to witness to salvation and to hope and all that is contained with that, then hopefully there's a degree of excitement about the fact of that message, that good news, that gospel, that hopefulness. So I hope you're following me, okay? Versus religion. So religion, as we all kind of know, is the whole idea of maybe laws and rules and regulations and a comfortableness, but that's not Christianity, because Christianity by its very nature is to be in relationship. So there's something about it that's dynamic. Okay, there's something about it that's dynamic, that's alive, because Christianity it's all about being involved with an individual, with Christ. It's being in relationship with Christ. It's not being in relationship with a denomination. It's not being in relationship with a local church. It's being relationship first and foremost with Christ, and everything flows from that. Okay, everything flows from that. It's not even being in, it's being there, right? So to be able to say that, to say, yeah, I'm talking to the choir, so what that means. But here's one of the cruxes of it for me. When I was in the seminary that I attended, which was, I don't know that it was all that unusual, but it would be unusual, I think, for in regards to some of the clergy in the CEC, because it was a seminary, it was an on-site seminary where you lived there for 4 years. And so you were one of the, there was about 100 of us theologians that studied together, and so we went through this four-year cycle, and we lived there and did ministry there throughout the year. And so you're there for that whole 4 years. And in those 4 years, you have, each year, you have assigned to you a spiritual director, an academic advisor, and a confessor. And so what you do is it's a whole formation process. And I had one spiritual director my first 2 years, and I had a different spiritual director my second 2 years. And the second spiritual director, I was, I really had such great respect for this individual as a teacher and as a person. And so in one of my encounters with him, I really wasn't all that prepared in regards to going in. And that it's one of those things that you had to go to on a regular basis. And so I really wasn't prepared. And that may sound like an odd thing to say, to be prepared, but I was just, I thought I wanted to go in there and kind of say something like I thought he might want to hear because I'm one of the students in the program and all of that. And so I went in and I sat down and I began to talk about some stuff that was going. And after a few minutes, he looked at me, and as I'm going to say this to you, I will never, ever forget what he said to me. I was talking to him, and all of a sudden, he looks at me, and he says, "I'm bored. I'm bored. And if I could have fallen through the floor at that moment, I would have loved to have. But I was thinking, I don't blame you, I'm bored too." But he said, "I'm bored." And I'll never forget that. And that was back in, 1983? And I thought, oh, God, may I never be boring. May my Christian faith and my Christian walk never be boring, dull, lukewarm, comfortable. I mean, think about that. You have somebody who's sitting across from you and you're talking to him about maybe, you know, some of the stuff going on, and you're just kind of, and he says, "I'm bored." It's like, is there nothing going on? Is there nothing going on? Think about that. Think about the whole context of what does it mean to be as a community? Remember one of the things talking about trying to have us push forward into fasting and to seeking that we will fulfill as a church the destiny that the Lord has for this church and for each of our lives, to become passionate and committed and desire to do that instead of becoming comfortable with where we're at and saying, I want a community that's nice, that's comfortable. But what if it's boring? It's like, if it's boring, let's go play golf on Sunday, right? I mean, let's go do something. But good heavens, if our relationship with Christ is not dynamic, if it's boring, if it's dull. I mean, Jesus says through his beloved disciples to one of the churches in Revelation, he says, "You're lukewarm." He said, "I'd rather you be hot or cold." But he said, "You're lukewarm, and quite frankly, because of the lukewarmness, it makes me sick. I want to vomit." It's not a particularly nice view, is it? But the interesting thing, have you ever seen that picture where you see Jesus on the outside knocking on the door? It's a very, very infamous passage. You know the one I'm talking about? It's in that passage of lukewarmness. It comes from that passage in Revelation. And it's like Jesus is knocking on the door and he says, "If you'll come and open the door, I'll come in." But you shut the door because there's lukewarmness there. It's like, "You don't let me in." Or the other one I love, I don't really love at all. It's that passage from 2 Kings 18, I believe it's verse 20, where Elijah is dealing with the children of Israel, and he's trying to get them to wake up in regards to their involvement with the prophets of Baal or with God. And he said, will you quit limping back and forth between two positions? For God's sake, make up your mind. Either be for God or be against him. But don't sit on the fence. Do something. Do something. Get dynamic. Get on fire. Don't stay comfortable. Now, remember, anytime one preaches, you're preaching to yourself before you preach to anybody else. And so when I'm saying this, this is not in any way to be anything other than encouragement for all of us in regards to where we want to go, where I want to go. This church is seeking its identity. It's seeking who she is, who she's called to be, not who she was. It's not looking over the shoulder and saying, who were we? It's saying, who are we now? Where are we going? The Lord's always going somewhere, and we're there to follow. The moment that we get to a place and say, this is how we've always done it. This is how we've always done it. It's like, no, 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 God, where are you dynamic? Where are you moving us now? What do you want us to do now? Where is he moving in each of our lives? Where is he moving in our marriages? Where is he moving in our careers? Where is he moving in what he's called? What is he doing? What is he doing? What's he saying? I don't know. And I would look at that and say, I don't really know what the Lord's calling me to do. And this can sound critical, and I don't intend that to. I don't intend it to. But it would be like somebody saying, well, there's not a lot happening in my prayer life. Well, whose fault's that? I'm not spending a lot of time in prayer. Well, whose fault's that? I don't know where the Lord is speaking. Whose fault's that? We're not waiting on him. He's waiting on us, right? He's waiting on us to run and to move and to go. And remember, and I've quoted this many times, it's C.S. Lewis's great quote, and I've probably said it 50 times. Which of the world's religions do you go to be comfortable? I said, I never went to religion to be comfortable. I always knew a good bottle of port wine could do that. He said, if you want to be comfortable, I certainly would not recommend Christianity. Jesus is not interested in our being comfortable. Jesus is interested in our holiness, in being 100% sold out to holiness. Committed, complete, pedal to the metal holiness. That's what he desires. He wants our heart and he wants it total because he's already given his to us. He wants it complete and total with no compromise. And that's what he wants of his church. That's what he wants as his bride. He wants to adorn her to be able to do the work that he's called her to do. Right? For each of us to fulfill the work that he's called us to do, to be able to stand before him and say, God, it cost me everything to follow you. And the more I was given the opportunity to give away for love of you, the freer I got. And the more energized I got, and the more power I saw you working in my life and through my life and around me, it was amazing. And I never dreamed. Christianity is not boring at all, and there's nothing about it that's boring. And let me say this, if one were to say it's kind of boring, I would say, then you don't get it. Right? I mean, you could look at anyone and say, if Christianity is comfortable and there's not a lot happening, that's not Christianity. Christianity is to be vibrant, alive, full, flowing. What if I were to say, and just challenge all of us to say, if someone were to say, well, I don't pray in tongues, then pray more to be able to get it released. Right? Pray more to get it released. Well, I don't move in the prophetic. Well, pray more that the Lord will release that so you will. I don't lay hands on people in the marketplace and pray that they be healed. Well, then ask the Lord to release that so you'll be willing to take the risk to do that. I don't know about getting involved in causes and other things. It's like, well, then ask the Lord to help you and give you the opportunity. But move, right? It's like move, move. That's what the Lord wants his church to do, to move. Now, why am I going through all of this? Because I want to get where he wants us to go. And I don't know how many people want to go, but I want to get there. I want to get where it is that he wants us to go. So look at the gospel today. Beginning in verse 32 of chapter 1. At evening, when the sun had set, they brought to him all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed. Think about that. They brought to him all who were sick and demon-possessed. And we hear this several times about all of those who were demon-possessed. Do we have to deal with the demonic? Is there anyone in here who's dealt with the demonic? If you have, raise your hand. Okay. Do you want to? So, now think about that. Just think about the fact of, it's kind of like, I don't really want to be in a war. And what if it's to say, well, I can understand that. Who wants to be in a war? But it's a war. It's a war nonetheless. It's a war for your kids. It's a war for your marriages. It's a war for your life. It's a war for your heart. It's a constant warfare. You know what the enemy continues to talk about? Things that are bellicose, pugnacious, and truculent. Argumentative, belligerent, bitter, cruel, ferocious, fierce, harsh, mean, quarrelsome, rude, savage, scathing, sharp, vitriolic, and on and on and on and on. To accuse, to condemn, to create guilt, to create shame, so as to bring upon a person's life brokenness, misery, and oppression. At evening, when the sun had set, they brought to him all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed. And it talks about how he healed them all. And it says in verse 35, now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. Okay, so he gets up real early. So one of the things to understand within the Middle Eastern culture is one of the ways that defines your importance is who you know. Because if you know somebody and you are the means by which you can get somebody who wants to meet the person that's important, that makes you pretty important. It's kind of like, you're the contact. Oh, you know so-and-so? Oh, is there any way that you can get me an audience with so-and-so? Oh, wow, so you have some real good context. If I get to know you and I kind of chum around you a little bit because you're a means to my end, then to a certain extent, I really like you because without even realizing I'm supportive of you, but I can also use you to get me where it is that I need to go. And so I'm more akin to spend time with you than somebody else who's not going to get me where it is that I need to go because you can get me where I need to go. And that's why I want to hang around you because I really like you because you can get me where I need to be. So I want to be in a place, in a position to be around people who can further what it is that I want to do that makes me look good. How'd I do? I mean, isn't that kind of what we do? I mean, we kind of want to make those affiliations and those contacts because to a certain extent, it can better our potential opportunities. And we may struggle a little bit by spending time with persons or situations that's not going to. So we struggle a little bit with that. So in the Middle Eastern culture, it was so important to recognize that you were seen as being somebody important if you are a contact person. So here's what I want you to get. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. In verse 36, and Simon and those who were with him searched for him. When they found him, they said to him, everyone is looking for you. Do you realize, Jesus, what happened? I got up this morning, put the coffee on, you know, got the croissants or whatever, went in and knocked on the door to get you up because people were starting to come to my door. And you weren't there. You know how that makes me look? So I've been searching all over for it. It's like, where did you go? Where have you been? Why didn't you tell me you were going to leave? Because what am I going to say to all of those who have gathered around my door and you're not there? And don't you love Jesus' response? Verse 37, when they found him, they said to him, everyone is looking for you. But he said to them, let us go into the next towns that I may preach there also, because for this purpose I have come forth. Isn't that amazing? It's like, Jesus, don't you want to chill? Just kind of hang out? Do all this stuff here. And he says, no, I got to go to the next place. And then I got to go to the next place. And then I go to the next place, because that's what he's telling me and that's what he's showing me. That's why I'm continually attuned to what it is that he is doing and what he's saying. I'm ever in tune with that. Won't that be amazing if all of us corporately can stand before the Lord in that final day and say, that Lord, with all my heart, what I wanted to do was to love you with all my heart and mind and soul and strength. That became the deepest desire. But what even preceded that was to know who I am in you and your love for me, that because of your love for me, I was to love you. And in the fulfillment of that, what I saw was a release of your kingdom in and through me. And it was amazing what you did. And I stood before you and I think you did all things well. You did all things well. And all of a sudden, I recognize all the fears, all the worries, all the doubts, all the confusions, all the problems, all the circumstances, all of that. Your perfect love casts out all fear. And all of a sudden, I begin to realize there's a whole lot of stuff that started fading away because I had my focus on you and how it is that you chose to use me, not how I wanted to use you. Please come into my world and do it my way. Please revolve around my world. God, I want you to pray and do this 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 and do this. And quite frankly, you're falling short because I have a list and you haven't fulfilled it all. But it's not our story, right? It's his story. It's his story. It's not our story. Our story gets submitted into his story. It becomes his story. And sometimes when his story invades our story, we don't always understand it, and it turns us upside down, and we think, Jesus, where did you go? I went and looked in your room, and you weren't there. And I found myself searching for you everywhere. Sounds a little bit like Song of Solomon, doesn't it? I went searching for you everywhere, everywhere, and I found you. Where did you go? And Jesus says, I've got to go to the next town. Do you want to come? Do you want to come? Do you want to come to the next thing? Or you can go back home and do whatever it is that you do back home. It's your choice. Or you can come. What do we want to do? What do you want to do? The invitation is always there. Come, 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 come. Check this one out. Luke chapter 13, verse 32. This is where some Pharisees have come to Jesus and said, you know, Herod wants to kill you. If I were you, I would skedaddle out of here. Okay. And Jesus says, go and tell that fox, behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfected. And the whole idea of, behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfected. Perform means it's consummate, means it's continuing to happen. It's a continuous action. It's a Greek verb. It continues to happen. In other words, wherever Jesus went, he taught and he healed continually, and it continued to happen. And that's what the church is supposed to do, right? Isn't that what the church is supposed to do, is to continue to perform until she is perfected as the bride of Christ, to continue to perform today and tomorrow, the next day, being about furthering the kingdom? And an aspect of that, I guess, has to do with casting out demons and curing and preaching, etc. I see a few scowls. 1 John chapter 3, verse 8. He who sins is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning. For the purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he, Jesus, might destroy the works of the devil. In Acts chapter 10, verses 1 through 48, it's that whole narrative between Peter and Cornelius. And the one verse, verse 38, it says, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with power, who went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. Can you imagine if a body began to recognize, God, where are you taking the local church? Please remember, there is no such thing as a visible and invisible church. The church in heaven is fulfilled in every local church on every single corner. It has the fullness of what she needs right here. It's not waiting for something else. The fullness of what Christ wants to do in his local church is already present. Why is that? Because he's here. And everything that Christ can do in a huge church, he can do in a local church because he's present and he wants to manifest it. And what happens if all of a sudden a community looks at something like this gospel that we have today and say, I want that which was proclaimed in our midst to come alive in our midst today for us. That's what I want for us, because that's the word that we just got today. Remember, when it's proclaimed in our midst, it becomes alive today. That's the wisdom of somehow that word was proclaimed in our midst today. That defines, to a certain extent, who we are and where we're going. That's what we're supposed to do. Jesus apparently is doing this preaching, teaching, healing, delivering. He gets up and moves, and to say, oh, I'm supposed to do that too. But where am I supposed to do that? Those seven mountains of culture? In school? In the classroom? At work? In the marketplace, at Walmart, at the mall, at the movie theater, your neighborhood? Where am I supposed to do that? Am I supposed to be looking for opportunities to be able to further that? What do you think? No? Yes. Remember, Jesus says, if you want to walk in power, you got to give, you got to pray, and you got to fast. And to be able to do that, that's what's going to make more sense. And it's like, that's what you're called to do continually. It's the priestly ministry of Christ. It's a life of sacrifice. Doesn't this just fill you with excitement and joy? I mean, you feel like maybe you're being talked to or talked at. Don't do that. That's not what I'm doing. It's not what I'm doing at all. But it all has to do with what's called exhortation, to exhort. To exhort, to say that I don't want to be comfortable. If the Pharisees can come up and tell Jesus, Herod's trying to kill you, I would get out of here. And what does Jesus do? He turns and says, go tell that fox, which is not a nice thing. Because foxes can be insidious, but they can be very bold depending on the circumstances. Go tell that fox that today and tomorrow and the next day, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing until I'm perfected. And he knew what that was leading to. And see, the enemy wants to come along and say, I wouldn't keep doing that. Even when I mention about, do you want to encounter the demonic? Well, somebody might say, I don't want to encounter the demonic. I don't want to practice the presence of the enemy. But are you going to come into it? If somebody says, that scares me. I don't want to have anything to do with it. Why? That's got to be a lie right there, right? I mean, if the enemy could destroy you, he would have already done it a long, long time ago. But all he wants to do is take from you what you already have. He wants to take from you what the Lord has already deposited within you and tell you that you don't have what it takes to further the Lord's kingdom with power and authority. Because when Jesus says, I got to go to the next town, you can come with me if you want. It's your choice. Or you can go back home. It's your choice. But if you're going to go with me, you're going to see more and more and more. It's up to you. If you want to go, you're going to see more. And it's going to cost you everything. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? And you think, what is it going to cost me? I mean, I remember when we were at that convocation in New York, one of the individuals that came up for prayer, and I may have shared that they had started to pray, Lord, I just want you to start to use me however you want to use me. And they came up and said, I prayed that prayer, and then I got really afraid because I thought, I don't know if I want him to answer it. I really don't know if I want him to answer it. I don't know if I want him to answer. I want you, Lord, to fulfill within me the promises you've made to yourself on my behalf to walk out the assignments and the destiny that you have given me to do. And I'm not really sure that I want to pray that prayer because I'm afraid what that might mean. And all of a sudden it's like, am I looking at you as a father who's for me, or am I all of a sudden afraid that you may ask me to do something I don't want to do? I don't want to do that! I want to just sit. I want to sit. God, how many times have I done that? Remember my sharing with you that bishop that said when he was talking about his four children, he said it didn't matter to him what their career was. It didn't matter to them what college they went to. He didn't care. All he cared is that they knew the Lord. That's all he cared about, because he said, I want to be with them in heaven. That's what I want. I don't care how it is you think you make your mark in the world. That's not of concern to me. My concern is for your salvation and your knowing the Lord. Everything else is second. That's what I want. And what happens if his priorities become so downloaded in us that I have such a passion? That's what I want, ultimately, to know that they are with you. That's what I want. John 3, 16 and 17. And for any of you who watch the Super Bowl today, sometimes when you pan, the cameras will pan, you'll see that it'll be John 3, 16. You ever seen that? When you've watched it, you'll see John 3:16. Anybody ever seen that? It typically shows up in the Super Bowl things. There'll be somebody holding it up so that the camera who does that can see that. Anyway, John 3:16, passage so familiar with us, right? God so loved the world. You think that's what he's doing. And then listen to this, Matthew chapter 1, verse 21. This is the whole narrative of the dream that Joseph had about not being afraid to take Mary as his betrothed wife. And this is what was said to Joseph, and she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. He will save his people from their sins. He will save us from our sins. He will save us from all the misery and the brokenness and all that that happens in humanity, because that's what he wants to do. That's what he wants to do in the local church, is to empower us, to send us out, to be able to do that which he came to do, and he wants to partner with us. Does that make sense? So what is a bit of our battles? I have two examples here that I thought were kind of interesting. The one is from Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, where the fall occurred. Remember when the enemy comes and whispers to the lady about, did God really say? Story very familiar with us, right? So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband who was with her, and he ate. Isn't that just the funniest thing? Sometimes Eve gets, she just gets, beat up for what she did. But apparently, Adam was right there. Like, she takes a bite and says, honey, you want a bite? Oh, sure. And then 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 17. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Sounds exactly like what just happened in Genesis, doesn't it? And see, that's where the whole world can get us all sucked in. It's the whole to do with lust and pride and all that. And it's the enemy just working and speaking. And all of that stuff needs to be taken to look at and say, apparently the Lord wants to set people free of that stuff. Here's another example, and I'm going pretty fast. The story of Cain murdering Abel. They both bring a gift unto the Lord, and apparently the Lord was pleased with Abel's, but he wasn't as pleased with Cain's, and I won't go into that right now, but it says, and let me read this, if you, Cain, do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is a demon that lies, crouches at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Isn't that fascinating? Cain, you're a bit upset, and you're allowing that to grow, do you not realize that sin is a demon sitting right outside your door wanting to come in, but you need to rule over it? And then go to Ephesians 4, 26 to 27. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that just fascinating? All these things that the Lord wants to set his people free from. So the very fact that it says that we believe in the forgiveness of sins and all that's entailed in that, and Jesus in this gospel today talks about that he goes out and he continues to set people free, forgiving their sin, setting them free from the demonic, bringing healing into their lives, preaching the good news so that they can be free. And we're called to do that with absolute abandonment. And see, if we ever lose that focus, then where do we search for our identity? As a local church, where do you search for your identity? We need to come up with some kind of a vision statement or a mission statement that defines who it is that we are. Really? Maybe it's all about preaching the gospel, casting out demons, etc., 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 and recognizing the voice of the enemy. All he wants to do is to be bellicose, pugnacious, truculent, argumentative, belligerent, bitter, cruel, ferocious, fierce, harsh, mean, quarrelsome, rude, savage, scathing, sharp, vitriolic. That's all he's about. He is a smackite. And the way that he likes to work is so insidious, by trying to put a thought in your head and have you entertain it for a bit. And then you might start talking about it. And you start talking about it and you start acting on it. And you start acting on it and you see the habit of it. And that's why I said when I started out, you take a step back and sometimes you listen to a person's words or you watch their actions and you think, what spirit is operating there? Because what we focus on is what we release. We either release the kingdom of the Lord Jesus, or release the kingdom of the world, or of the flesh, or of the enemy. It's not rocket science. And the more that you do that as a community, that you start to recognize, God, free us from every encumbrance of sin. Take away every encumbrance of sin, everything that is contrary to owing no other thing except love to my neighbor. Take away everything part that is anything to do with what it means to fulfill this commitment in my marriage, for my children, in my career, as a student, whatever it be. Teach me what it means to be comfortable with not being comfortable. And God, if you have to take me and shake me so that that which is not stable starts to fall off, give me the courage to do that. How many times in the spiritual life, if you read of the lives of those who have gone before us, one of the things that they will say over and over again, one of the things that's needed in the spiritual life is courage. Courage. Because it's being able to trust that he knows what he's doing when he starts the shaking. When he starts the shaking and saying, I need to have you let go of this, so that you can fulfill what it is I've called you. But it's your choice. You can come along with me, or you can go back home and find some place of comfort. It's your choice. But you have the invitation. Amen? Peace of the Lord be with you. Let's offer one another a sign of Christ's peace.